Welcome to our Membership Site Master Series, where we take an inside look into some of the world's most successful membership sites. This series is proudly sponsored by Wishlist Member, the number one membership solution trusted by tens of thousands of membership site owners worldwide. Visit www.wishlistmember.com for more details. In this interview, you'll hear from someone we call the Freebie Genie. For years, he had been publishing some of the web's best content, and he had been giving it away for free. The site scraped by on advertising revenue. However, the moment he started charging for his content, everything changed. His revenue went up, and surprisingly, his traffic went up. And because of his success, he was able to hire a team of people to then help him. That meant more time doing the stuff he enjoyed the most. So how did he turn his content from something everyone had grown accustomed to accessing for free and then turn it into a paid membership? You'll find out all the details in this blockbuster interview. He's crafted a beautiful blend of content strategies that draw people in and convert them into paying members. And during this interview, you'll find out how he does it and how you can do it too. So take out your notepad and pen and get ready to soak up the wisdom of Mr. Andrew Warner. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stu McLaren, co-founder of Wishlist Member, and I want to welcome you to today's interview where we're going to be speaking with Andrew Warner, the founder of MixerG.com. Now, Andrew's had a ton of success in business, and one of the things that he wanted to do was distill that knowledge by also sharing not only his thoughts on business, but also the thoughts of many other successful business owners as well. And he does that through his site, MixerG.com. So with that, Andrew, welcome to today's call.
Thanks for having me on. I've gotten so much out of listening to your interviews with other people, and I'm glad that I'm going to get to contribute back by sharing what I've learned.
Well, for me, I'm just very excited because you are like the Larry King of the digital world, and this is just going to be a great interview. I can't wait to dig in. So what I want to do is I really want to drill down into your site. I want to talk to you about what you're doing because MixerG.com is a great example of a membership site that combines not only free content and paid content. I want to talk to you about that. I want to talk to you about how you made the transition to paid content. I want to talk to you about some of the other little tips and tricks that you are utilizing within your site. So before we get started, I want to give everybody a 30-second overview of what is MixerG.com.
MixerG is a website where I interview entrepreneurs about how they built their businesses. And when you say I'm the interview king, I'm not sure that I've gotten to Larry King's number of interviews, but I have 614 interviews on the website with people like the founders of Wikipedia, Kiva, Groupon, Living Social. All these great guys have come on. Let me interview them about how they built their businesses. I offer that for free for, I think it's a week or two, and then we make it members only, so people have to sign up for a membership and pay monthly in order to see it. We also recently added courses where I bring back many of these entrepreneurs and I say, show me your computer screen and teach me one thing that you do well. So if you're really good at SEO, teach me how to do search engine optimization. If you're really good at building membership sites, which Stu, you are, I invited you to come on and teach me and my audience how you do it. That was a course that's members only, and we get people to sign up to take those courses and listen to old interviews.
Now, I want to kind of dig deep here because MixerG in the beginning didn't always offer or didn't always have paid content. I mean, when I first saw it, everything was wide open, everything was free. Mm-hmm. What was your strategy with the old site? How did you make money when you were giving away all of your content like that?
I wasn't really. And then when I started charging, I got a bigger audience and I started bringing in more revenue. And I'll tell your audience how I did it to as much as I can. I'm willing to be open, but I think if they go to the site and spy on me, or just spy on me on the internet as much as possible, they're going to discover many more tactics than I could even reveal in this interview. But I'll share. But I also think you watch me, you sign up to the mailing list, you sign up to everyone who comes on here to do an interview to their mailing list, and you spy on their websites, and you guys are going to learn even more. But I wasn't making money. I was selling advertising, and then I discovered Wishlist, and I installed the plugin myself, started using it, and like I said, the audience grew, the revenue grew, and we had a whole new revenue stream.
So in the beginning, you were supplementing your site and your time by selling advertising. I know you do that in your interviews itself. You have sponsors for the interviews. And so transitioning to paid content, that provided you certainly another revenue source. Can you talk to me about the difference that that made for you in terms of just having more income to be able to do more things?
Yeah. You know, I decided when I launched the site that I wouldn't put any of my own money into it at all. And I wouldn't, obviously, for something like this, there's no venture capital. I said, I just will let it survive on its own or die on its own. And the money from advertising was doing okay. But when I started charging, I brought in even more money, which enabled me to hire an editor to edit my interviews and enabled me to then bring on a course producer to talk to people to help them work through their courses and make it as useful as possible. I now brought in someone to be a pre-interviewer and a researcher. So the work has gotten better and better because of the revenue that's come in from charging for monthly membership.
And so you mentioned that by transitioning to a paid content site, your revenue grew, which we just talked about, but your audience also grew as well. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. So here's how the audience grew. By telling people this is free today, but a week from now you're going to have to pay, I create a sense of urgency that gets them to take action and go and watch those interviews quickly. And I've tested this in email. I will send out an A-B test. In one email, I say, this is going to be free for a week. In the next email, I say, hey, go and watch this interview without mentioning that it won't be free after any period of time. When I say it's free for a short period of time, more people click, more people go and watch, more people go and download. And the problem with blogs and interviews and any content online is that there's no sense of urgency. Why would anyone go to your website right now and download or watch it or read it? There just isn't a reason for it. And so if you create the sense of urgency, they have to.
Yeah, I think this is a really powerful lesson for anybody who is publishing content, whether it be free or paid, because, I mean, you hit the nail right on the head, especially with free content that you're readily giving it away. When there's no urgency, people will put it on the I'll read that later list. And in fact, I've got one of those lists, you know, where I see articles that I know I'll be interested in, but I just don't have time at that particular moment. I'll read that later. I mean, that list just grows and grows every day. I very rarely get back to actually, you know, reading some of that article. So this is a great strategy to encourage people to consume your content. And when they consume it, that's when they get value and they appreciate the site more. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And also, if you put a price on it, it doesn't seem like another free piece of content that's available online. When you value it enough to charge for it, the audience values it enough to want it and to ask for it. I mean, I used to have older interviews on the website, and because they were older, people just wouldn't watch them. I saw the traffic numbers. They were junk. I would even promote it by putting a big picture of the person who I interviewed 2 months ago on the homepage, and still people wouldn't click because it's kind of an old interview. No one wants old. But once I started charging, people started begging me for old interviews. If they couldn't afford them, they would email me and say, Andrew, I can't pay $25 a month, which really, how can you not have $25 to just go and watch this? But fine, say I can't afford to watch it. What do I do to get it? And I'd give it to them. But the fact is that they'd value it enough to ask for it, I think, says that we now made older stuff that people didn't value into valuable property.
Well, I love what you've done with it, and I'm so glad that you are charging for it, because to me, it's just a huge well of information that people can go to time and time again. And there are some kick-ass interviews on that site. I mean, I listen to it every day when I'm walking the dog. That's pretty much my daily routine. Now, for making the transition to paid content, you said you obviously were using Wishlist Member. And I want to talk to you kind of a little bit about how you're setting this up, because now you also are offering courses. So I want to talk first about the courses. I want to dig a little deeper there. And then I want to talk to you about the setup kind of behind the scenes so people can get an idea of what you're doing. So you also have, you've got all these interviews, over 600 of them now, and you archive them, you mentioned after about a week or so, and they go into the paid area. You also have courses that you offer on the site. Can you talk to us about what those are and where the inspiration for those came?
The courses are, well, the interviews happen via video Skype, and we just show the two videos of my video and my guest video as we talk to each other. The courses, we add another element. We show the guest's computer screen. And if he's going to talk about SEO, we say, don't just talk about how to do it. Can you bring up a WordPress site, then go into the back end, and just show us which plugins we need to install. Show us how you install those plugins. Explain why you chose those plugins specifically for increasing search engine optimization. Show me maybe traffic numbers of how each one of those plugins helped you get more people to your website. Walk me through and teach me how I can do the same thing. I mean, like right down to install a plugin, set it up exactly right, and teach me the ideas behind it. And that's essentially a course. And we do that using GoToMeeting. And with GoToMeeting, we can show the two faces of my face as I talk and my guest face as he talks and their computer screen.
So did the idea for this come from feedback from your audience who were maybe asking for follow-up on some interviews where some of your guests were talking about specific issues? Where did that idea come from?
It came from people saying, make it even more practical and more useful. I try to make my interviews not just conversations, but I try to pack as many tactics as possible into them. And I want to know specifically how each guest used those tactics. So, for example, the founder of Groupon, I don't want him to just say, start off simply. I want him to explain how he set up a WordPress site to launch Groupon and how he got his first users and his first customers and so on. Well, I tried that, and people said, we want even more. We like it. We want even more. And I wasn't sure what they had in mind, so I tested via email an idea for a course. I said, I'm thinking of doing a course on the site. I'm not sure which topic it'll be. If you want to sign up, I'm only going to accept 20 people. Click here and just tell me a little bit about why you want to sign up and which of these topics that I'm considering you want to sign up for. And I got a lot more people signing up for it than I expected. And the topic that they mostly wanted was how to launch. So I thought, all right, let's put on a class on how to launch. I'll have a friend come in and he'll teach it. And that did pretty well, even though the technology was crappy and we had all these issues with the audio and the video and everything went bad. And it still did pretty well. So I thought, you know, let's try again and let's try again and again and again and again. And I fell in love with doing them. Because I'm a curious person. I want to learn this stuff myself. When I had you on to teach how to do membership sites right, it wasn't just because it was going to sell to my audience. In fact, the primary reason I did it was I'm curious. How do I build a better membership site? And I know if I'm curious about it, there'll be other people who are curious and want to learn too. And if I'm curious and I want specific information that I can use, then I know I'll be able to get specific information that my audience can use. And it was as simple as that.
Well, and one of the things that I hope people get from that response, Andrew, is just your willingness to try different things. I mean, that's one of the things that I love about hearing how you went about that, because, you know, a lot of people are afraid to try new things with their membership site or with their email list or just to experiment with making things better. But for you, this was a chance to kind of test a hunch, an idea that you thought might work with your audience. And you sent it out an email, you were just testing the waters, and based on that response, you made progress from there. And the other thing I hope they get is the fact that it wasn't perfect the first time out of the gate. Can you talk to us a little bit about that in terms of how things continuously improve with not only your interviews but your courses?
The way that we improve, the way I personally improve, is by not worrying excessively about quality, but really being obsessed with quantity. And I know that this isn't a popular point of view, but I'll explain it. If I sit down and think about, like, how do I ask the right question, and I'll take 2 months between interviews or even 1 month between an interview, I'm not going to improve. I'm going to obsess and I'm going to hold myself back. But if I say to myself, which is what I did, I said, I'm going to do an interview every day. I'll just publish it every single day. And if it's bad, I'll publish it. And if it's great, I'll publish it. But I'll force myself to produce. With that production schedule, if I screw up on Monday, I can't escape the screw up on Tuesday. I can't say, oh, I can't procrastinate. I can't keep from learning from it. I say, I've got an interview on Tuesday. What didn't I do right on Monday? I've got to get it a little bit better on Tuesday, or else I'm going to suffer again from the insecurity of publishing something bad. And so I just keep publishing and publishing and publishing. And with that, I get better and better and better. And I look for just small changes that I can make to improve. So, for example, if I see in one interview that a guest is rambling and I didn't pull him back, I'll publish that anyway. Often I think it's rambling and the audience says, hey, this is still a great interview. So that's one reason why I publish it. But the other reason is I publish it and then the next day I see someone's going a little bit too far. He's rambling a little bit. So I'll say, forgive me. I want to hear more about this story, but I've got to ask you about this other thing here too, or else I'll really be in trouble with my audience if I don't push you on that. And so I practice that. And if that doesn't work, then I come in with another approach the next day and I get room to improve and improve.
So you get better by doing rather than obsessing over it beforehand.
Yeah, exactly. And the internet is so good for if you just keep putting stuff out there, people just find you. The more stuff you put out there, even if it's not your best stuff, Google doesn't know it's not your best stuff. I mean, you're just another – everything you publish is another Google hit. So I'll give you an example of that. I did an interview with the founder of sex.com. I'm not sure it was my best interview, but it was really good. I still get hits from people who type in the word sex.com. I don't know why, but they type it into Google. They discover my site as one of the search engine results. They click over. I get people finding old interviews that I don't think are especially good. Oh, I hate you. People will type into Google, I hate you. And I did an interview with someone who got inspired when he got a note on his car randomly that wasn't meant for him even that said, I hate you. And he talked about that in the interview. I had the transcript or I had it somewhere in my notes about him. I still get traffic from the word I hate you. Even though it wasn't one of my best interviews, it's out there. I get traffic from it. People come because they type in I hate you randomly into Google. They land on that page. Either they enjoy it or they click over to another post on the site and I've got them. Bad stuff is bad. Bad content is still content that could potentially get you new customers and new visitors.
I love it. And one of the things that I want to talk to you about now as we move forward is that you created a crap load of content ahead of time before you transitioned to paid. And I want to talk to you about that because you really used your content to build your audience and to create a following, even if it's not as big as you mentioned now where you are charging for the content and you've created a bigger audience. But you still had an audience that was listening to you, understood that you were doing these interviews, and admired the fact that you were able to get these guests on a frequent basis. Can you talk to us about making the transition from free to paid content and what that was like for you?
It was, to be honest with you, it was pretty rough. I got beaten up a lot online for doing that. And because of that, I've thought about the way that I transitioned and I realized I should have just charged right from the start for something. Let people know this is a site that cares about making money. I should have done that. Because of the kind of people who I'm going after real cutting edge, startup oriented tech guys. They're not used to paying for anything. They just want free, 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 free. Because of that, I got skewered. The message boards which sent me the most traffic are the ones on Hacker News, and people there started ripping into me. Thankfully, there were a few people who also understood that with more revenue means that this becomes a real business and I can actually hire people and improve the quality of my work. And also that if I'm talking about entrepreneurship and I don't charge, it means I don't understand the first thing about business. And so I have to charge. They said that on my behalf in the message boards, and that helped out a lot. If I could do it again, though, I would charge as soon as possible.
And that's interesting to hear because I think that's a huge challenge for some people is the fear of charging for content and will people pay? And in this situation, it was an even bigger challenge for you because you had essentially trained your audience to expect everything for free.
Yeah.
And then to make a transition to, charging for content, that's an even bigger hurdle.
If I could do it again, what I would do ideally is from the beginning start charging for the older interviews or start charging for something and let people know that I'm going to adjust. Having said that, if I didn't do that and it was time for me to charge, I would probably not charge for the stuff that was already free first. I would probably add something else and charge for that and then maybe go back and charge for the stuff that was free. But to just right away charge for stuff that's already free is is a shock for people, and it also keeps them from understanding the model fully, because they don't know, some people don't know that the new stuff is still free, the old stuff is what I'm charging for. Some people didn't make that distinction. So that what I would do is, again, charge right from the beginning if I could. If I didn't do that, if I had free stuff already on the site, I would charge for some new thing, and then I would expand what I was charging for and the quality of it. Now, what I
Got it.
would not do
Now,
is, I'm sorry to interrupt, but this is really important for me to say, because you've mentioned it before and I think it's important for the audience to know. I would not obsess about making it good. I would just put out a, even if it's a piece of garbage, it's okay. You can charge for it, and then you can, when you improve, you can give the new free thing to your audience later on when you get it better. Or you can charge for it, get money, and then give a refund right away. But you've got to learn, charging for stuff is a skill. It takes time. I didn't learn how to write the right sales page right away. I didn't want to in hiding, build up the perfect product and the perfect site and then start charging. I wanted to learn slowly how to do it. And it's something that you absolutely learn, and it's okay to learn it in public, and it's okay, I think, to tell people, I'm not going to get it right the first time. You should expect for me to learn in public and make mistakes in public.
that's a big, big lesson for everybody. I hope people make note of that, because that again is another one of those challenges. People want to make it perfect, and they never get it going. And that's, part of the problem is, as you said, you learn by doing, and that's really where you're going to make the most progress. And I want to talk to you about that, because as we've seen on your site, you do experiment with a number of different ideas. And one of the things that I find very clever about Mixergy.com is how you draw people in with your free content, as we talked about, by creating urgency. It's only going to be free for a certain period of time. But inevitably, when they're on your site, they're going to be clicking around and looking at other interviews. And when they do, they can see the content, but they just can't access it. And is that using some of the protection features of Wishlist Member?
Yeah, absolutely. Wishlist enables me to hide content from people who don't have the membership level that entitles them to that content. And then it allows me to put up an image in place of that content or any. Actually, here's what I do. I say old videos and MP3s are only available to two membership levels, Premium and Vault. And if you don't have that, what I do is I hide the content, and instead I put a picture that looks like a video player, that looks like it has a big play button on it that encourages you to click on it. And so it looks like you've got this video that you're about to watch, that you want to watch it, you click on it, and then instead of the video playing, you're taken to a page that says you have to pay or log in order to pay, in order to play the video. And I've done a little bit of tests, and that works, because I want people to at least to say to themselves and to say to me, I want to watch this. And if they say to themselves, I want to watch this, and then they see a page that sells, they then at that point just have to decide, do I want to pay for it or not? But I think if I right away said, this video is only for members, people just wouldn't even consider it. They wouldn't think about whether they should hit play or not.
Well, I think it goes back to even when we're kids. We always want what we can't, or what we're told we can't have. And in this situation, you've created desire. People are clicking through to listen to those old interviews, but you're using the non-member redirect to send them to a page that says, this is archive content. It's part of the premium membership. Here's how you can sign up. And I think it's just a beautiful and elegant example of how to utilize some of the features in Wishlist Member to create interest in the content, still protect it, and yet also drive them to the place where they can then purchase it and begin accessing. I think it's a beautiful, and I highly encourage people to go to Mixergy.com and just go back a couple pages and try to access one of the old interviews. And you'll see this in action. And it's just a great example of how to, again, use the features and drive them to a place where they can actually pay. Now, based on that, how has that whole process impacted your sales? Because you mentioned you tried a number of different things, and now I see that you've settled on this. Was that the clear-cut winner for you in terms of that image that you have that looks like they can access it until they click on it?
Well, to be honest, I'm not doing a lot of A/B testing on that anymore. I just settled on that. It works okay, and I'm happy with it, because in addition to also getting more members that way. I can also see, is it the video that people aren't interested in? Like, I mean, do they happen not to care about the Groupon story and that's why they didn't press play? Or is it that they see, or is it the membership that they don't like? You know, I want to know what's sending more people into the membership to the membership paid page, so I get a sense of which kinds of interviews people value enough to want to play, and I get a sense of which interviews get people to pay. So I get a little bit of data from that, and I've played a little bit with improving those click-through rates, but then I stopped and then moved on to other areas of the site. As I looked at the questions that you sent me in preparation for this, I realized, you know, there's a lot that we could be doing better. And I started to beat myself up and say, why aren't we testing that image? Why aren't we doing this? And I realized, you know, we're not doing it because I can't do everything. And I have to focus on a handful of things and do them well. And what's great about the model that we have, that you guys enable us to have, is it's a membership model. I get my members to stick with me from month to month to month. And in time, I'll improve more and get other things right, and they'll be there to experience it. And what's great too for me is, with the membership model, even at my worst, and we've screwed up in the past with the way that we launched the membership and the way that we sold it and so on, even with our bad days and bad months, every single month we made more money than the month before. Every single month the revenue has grown with membership. And that's one of the reasons why I really like having a membership program.
So talk to me about this, Andrew, because you mentioned you have two different membership levels. So I kind of want to talk about the technical aspect of that. You said you had a premium level and you had a vault level. Can you explain to us the difference between the two, and is there a difference in price point of those two levels?
Yeah, I'm actually not selling the vault. What I do with the vault is only the old interviews. It's the 600 plus interviews that are available only to members. Premium is those interviews plus all the courses, and that's what I sell, access to premium. What I do with the vault is I realize once I put a price on my content, I put a value on it. And so now I've got this valuable asset that I've created because there's a price on it. And if there's someone who I want to work with, I can give them this valuable thing that I've created that has a price on it. And so we send out volunteer requests for certain things on the site. And what we do instead of paying people is say, you'll get access to the vault. And I get emails from people who say, I want access to those old interviews, but I can't afford them. And I say, all right, great. I'll give you the vault. Can you help out one of my guys who's trying to help out our audience? We've created this asset, and I'm thinking of other ways to use that asset that we've now created. Maybe for links, maybe for, I don't know. But now with the vault, I've created an asset that I get to use in different creative ways.
I love it. And I'm taking notes on that, Andrew, because I think that's a brilliant strategy to combat the people who do want to have access to it, but for whatever reason can't find the money to be able to afford it. But this is a great way to also allow them to earn it. And I think, and I'd love to get your opinion quickly on that, is people appreciate it when they've earned it rather than when it's just given to them.
Yeah, would you agree? I've seen that, absolutely.
So let's also quickly transition to talk about your pricing, because you have different pricing options. You offer a monthly price, a quarterly price, and an annual price, but you emphasize the monthly. Can you talk to us about how you set that up and why you chose to do that?
You know, now that you mention it, I'm thinking maybe I should emphasize the annual. I'll have to play around with it. It's kind of fun, actually, to play around with the design and to play around with the flow, to realize that the same quality content, the same information, the same everything can be more valuable and generate more revenue and more excitement if you adjust some little thing. Like, we made the call to action button on the homepage more prominent, and suddenly orders went up. It's not because I improved the courses, not because I improved the quality of my recording or the quality of my guests. It's just I improved the placement of the call to action, and boom, more people are now enrolled in the membership program. So now that you mention it, we should probably try out emphasizing the annual. The reason we put the annual there is I've always thought I want to charge monthly so that I can see so that I can keep the price low and I can see if people stick around. And if they stick around, it's telling me we're on the right track. And if they don't stick around, then it means that I have to go and figure out what to improve in the membership site. We then added the annual, which is $199, because we wanted to make the we wanted to anchor the price. We wanted to make the monthly fee of $25 seem even smaller, and that's why we did it. And we also wanted to see, well, you know, if a lot of people take the annual, then it means that there are a lot of people who just don't see $200 as a significant expense. So we should probably start increasing our monthly and increasing all of our prices, you know. That was my thinking on it. Most people still take the monthly, but as you've made me realize, maybe it's because we're emphasizing the monthly. Maybe if we made it a little, if we de-emphasized it, maybe more people take the annual, and maybe that's better for us. I'll have to think about it.
Well, I think it depends. I think it's a good point in that you, when you have a monthly membership, as you mentioned, it holds you accountable. It holds you accountable to fight every single month to win over your members again and again and again. Mm-hmm. And I like that sense of accountability as a membership site owner because it keeps me on my toes. A lot of people who sell annual memberships, they don't have that same sense of accountability to fight every single month. And in essence, they get lazy with their content. They get lazy in terms of winning over their members every month. And as a result, the overall membership begins to decline. And then they wake up one day and they wonder where all their members went. And so I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing that you're focusing on the monthly, because as you said, it just keeps you accountable. And at the end of the day, when you have a membership site, retention is the number one thing that all membership site owners should focus on. But unfortunately, it's not. So I like the way you're approaching that, Andrew. I think it's a smart move. And, you know, you said it right off the top. It's the thing that keeps you on your toes in order to make sure that the membership is attractive for people. So I think there's a lesson learned there for everybody as well.
Oh, that's encouraging to hear.
So as we move forward, your site has really grown tremendously with the number of interviews you're doing, with the number of courses that you're doing. And you mentioned that you have recruited some other people to get help with different areas. You talked earlier about an editor, a course producer, a researcher. How did you know who you would need to help you with this whole aspect, and how did you go about finding them?
Well, I tried to keep the interview production really, really simple. I said I'm going to spend an hour researching the person. I'll hit record when we start doing the interview. I will not do any funky shots. I will not do any impressive video. I won't do it live. I mean, I won't do it in person, just all on Skype, and I'll publish it raw, and that'll keep things simple. But I found that there were little things that I could pass on to other people and free my time to think about the rest of the business and also to keep from burning out. I was really worried about burning out. Considering my production schedule of not just publishing a blog post every week, but publishing a whole video blog post every day, but every single day doing video interview that I publish. So I thought, well, the first thing I could do is get an editor. I can teach him how to edit my simple system and pass that on. So I did that. Then I thought later on, I could use a little bit of help booking guests. So I found someone who could help me book guests. I said, you know, the text that we use to promote the interview is pretty basic. It's the stuff that I say in the introduction to the interview. So I could use someone to basically transcribe that, add a little bit of flourish to it, and make it into a full blog post so that I don't have to do that. Like every little thing that I do that was going to burn me out if I kept doing it, I said, who can I find to do it? And I found people by mostly asking my friends. The video editor I found because I had a friend who talked about an outsourcing company in Guatemala. And I said, hey, are they good? Should I be using them? He said, sure, go for it. He made the introduction and I went with them. The virtual assistant who helps me with booking guests and doing all these other things that go into the site, I was introduced to by a friend who said, I'm using a virtual assistant who has more time. Do you want someone? It'll help me to be able to get her more money, and it'll help you if you can use her. So I signed up. I found that kind of stuff, that those kind of referrals go a long way, because when I signed up for online virtual assistant companies, they didn't really care about me. They didn't care about the quality. It just didn't work out. Now I go almost exclusively to my friends or to my audience when I'm looking to hire people.
Gotcha. And the other thing that I think is very important for people to realize in the beginning, I mean, you were doing everything. You were doing all of your interviews. You're doing your editing. You're writing the copy. You're getting the emails out to everybody. Now you're really building a team of people to handle specific tasks. And even to the point now where you have somebody, David, who helps you with some of the courses,
yep.
where he'll actually be the one interviewing the guests. And I think, again, that's important for people to realize, because sometimes we get hung up on our own egos to the point where, as you said, you burn yourself out. But by letting certain things go and realizing that as long as the people that you're hiring are trained and trustworthy, then the product itself will maintain its integrity throughout. And that brings about more time for you to focus on the things that you want to do and do them even better. Would you agree there?
Absolutely. And charging goes a long way to enabling you to do that. It means that you have a real business that other people can count on when they're trying to get paid. It means that you have money that you could afford to pay for things, that you can afford to pay for help, that you can afford to pay for experiments. Charging and charging, I believe, I know that Wishlist works, especially the new version, you can use it to charge for just wine items or memberships, and we do that. We charge for individual items, and we also offer membership. I'd much rather have membership. Dependable source of revenue, you know exactly how much you're bringing in every month, and you can then count on it to grow your business.
Right. Well, I want to be mindful of your time, Andrew, as we begin closing down here. I want to talk to you about moving forward. What things are you looking to experiment with? Can you share some ideas about things that you're going to look to try to add or subtract, or just new things in general that you're going to look to do to enhance your membership?
The current thing I'm doing is just systemizing it so that it works flawlessly and it works predictably, and everyone knows exactly how many courses they could expect in the membership, and I know exactly how much effort it's going to take to do it, and that's important to me. Going forward, I've been just looking at the emails that I'm getting from members and trying to figure out what they really want. People are saying they like the courses, but it would help if they could get checklists to use with the courses. So I'm thinking now maybe we should hire someone to do a checklist for the audience. You know, you take a course, you don't remember what you need to do, but if you have the checklist afterwards, you can go through it and use it. I've been thinking of doing a chat room, a message board, and I'm reluctant, and at the same time I see that it could be really powerful, so I'm not exactly sure if that's something that we should do, but I've been thinking about it for a long time. And then overall, we're thinking, what else can we do to get more members sign up, to get more people enrolled in this?
Gotcha. And what I want to do here at this point is I'm going to quickly review what we've talked about, Andrew, and then I'm going to hand it back to you for some final thoughts. And
okay.
The thought that I'd love for you to share is, you know, what advice would you give to somebody who's perhaps thinking about starting a membership site, or perhaps somebody who has a membership site, because obviously you could speak to both of those individuals. But before we get to that, I'm going to give everybody a quick recap of some of the things that we've talked about here today. And Andrew really is an awesome person who has experience when it comes to membership sites with his site, Mixergy.com. Now, this wasn't always a membership site. I mean, he had hundreds and hundreds of interviews that he conducted every single week and gave them away absolutely free. I mean, this was a huge site of just massive free content. And now, though, it is still a massive site of tons of free content, but he's transitioned to now begin charging for it, where it's free for a week and then he archives it. And again, the only way to access the archives is to become a premium member. He also provides courses that teach one thing or one specific strategy, and members have access to those courses as well. But what the interesting thing was Andrew talking about what happened when he began charging for content. His revenue not only increased, but so did his audience size. And the reason was because he began charging for that, it created an urgency in his audience to go to the site at that point in time to watch and consume the content while it was free, because those interviews, again, are only free for a certain period of time. So it created urgency, and when there's a price, people value that content even more. So very, very important lesson there for anybody who is just giving content away free willy-nilly, in the sense that it, by creating urgency, you get people to consume that content quicker, faster, and obviously it creates more value. Now, Andrew's thought on the whole site in the beginning was just, I'm going to create a site, and if it can survive on its own, great. If it dies, well, then it wasn't meant to be. And initially, he was just charging for advertising. He was provided sponsors at the beginning of his interviews, and that's how he was earning revenue. But when he transitioned to the paid model and he began offering the courses as well, his revenue skyrocketed. Now with the courses, it's a little bit different. There's two real things that Andrew is selling. One is the interviews with all of these well-known business experts and startup founders and so forth. People get access to the archives of those. But in addition, Andrew's begun to create specific courses that focus on a certain subject matter. They're more detailed. There's more step-by-step instruction. He uses GoToMeeting and really dives into the computer of the person that he's interviewing and showing them step-by-step what they are teaching their particular audience. And the reason he did this was because it came from requests of his audience. He was listening to his audience. That's one thing Andrew does very, very well, is listen to the needs of the audience. And they were saying, we love your interviews. They're jam-packed full of practical tips, but can you show us a more step-by-step, more granular? And that's what Andrew began providing his audience. The other thing is that Andrew initially did not just all of a sudden start rolling everything out as paid content. He tested the waters first. He tested an idea for a course, and he sent an email to his list. And he said, listen, this is what I'm thinking about doing. I'm thinking about doing a course. It's going to be limited to 20 people. If you're interested, let me know. Well, the response immediately told him that this was, they were onto something. Now, although the first course that they did, Andrew admittedly was not the highest of quality, had crappy audio and video, and it wasn't the best quality, Andrew says, listen, don't focus on quality. Don't obsess over it at first. Focus on quantity. Because when you are producing a lot of stuff, you're going to learn how to get better and better by doing. And you focus on small changes that you can make, and you're naturally going to get better and better instead of obsessing over it in the beginning. And the more stuff you put out there, the more people will find you. And that was certainly a big key, has been a big key to Andrew's success, is just the sheer volume of content that he's creating, because he said Google doesn't distinguish between good quality and bad. So when you have all this stuff out there, naturally it brings in a whole bunch of different ways that people can find you. And he gave us some great examples of sex.com and the words I hate you and how that played a role in his site. But making the transition from free to paid wasn't exactly easy. Andrew admitted the transition was actually pretty rough, because he had trained his audience right from the get-go to expect everything for free. And when he began charging, he got quite a lot of backlash from people who just always wanted access to that content for free. But a few people spoke up, and they began voicing the fact that, hey, if Andrew charges, he can create a more high quality product and he can spend more time, and it's a real business. I mean, that's what the site is all about, is building a business. And slowly but surely, the audience came around, and now obviously it's a huge success. So Andrew's advice on that is charge from the beginning if you can, because charging people for something is a skill, and you can always make it better. Even if your first production is crap, he said, listen, you can improve it and give the people that invested in the beginning the revised version. Give them a better version. He said, but always charge from the beginning. The way he protects his content is that he has two membership levels. He has the premium level and the vault level. Now, what he sells is the premium level, and that gives people access to all the archived interviews as well as the specific courses. But what I found interesting was that he uses the vault as a way to be able to work with different people who may not be able to afford the particular premium membership. They contact him. They say, listen, I really love your stuff. Would love to have access to those interviews, but I can't afford it. He says, no problem. Perhaps you can help me out with this, and in exchange, I'll give you access to the vault. So it's very, very powerful way in terms of how he's using that vault level. And he said, when you are producing a membership site, realize that there are so many things that you can change and so many things that you can modify, but you can't get overwhelmed by that. You can't do everything. You've got to focus on a few things that you can tweak and move forward from there. He said, but at the end of the day, even with bad days and bad months, he makes more money every single month because of his paid membership. He said, so just sell the premium. He said, because when you value it, other people give value to it, and it's certainly going to help you in the long run. As far as pricing, they have three options, the monthly, the quarterly, and the annual. They focus on monthly, and what I found interesting was the reason why. Andrew said, because it holds him accountable to continue to produce great content so that his members are aware, so that they continue to get value, and it certainly, so that they'll stay, and that certainly helps keep him accountable. Now, we also talked about how Andrew has begun growing, and he's not just doing everything himself now. Because he has more money coming into the business, he's investing some of that money into hiring people to help him create even higher quality product. He has somebody who helps him with editing. He has somebody who helps him produce the courses. He has a researcher. He has somebody who helps him book all of the interviews. All of this is possible because he now has revenue coming in. And he said, the thing is, in the beginning, he just focused on keeping it simple, keeping the production value simple, so that he could train somebody to easily take over those tasks. And now he focuses on the little things that he can hand off to somebody else that will free up more of his time to focus on what he does best. And he said, when you begin charging, you can pay people for help. You can pay to experiment with different ideas, because membership equals dependable income. Now, moving forward, what is Andrew focusing on? Continuing to systematize his entire membership business. He's also looking to get feedback from his audience as far as what other things that they want. And obviously, one of the things that they mentioned was a checklist. So Andrew's natural first thought was, could he hire somebody to help create those checklists? He's thought about possibly also adding a chat room or a forum. That's something he might experiment with. And then certainly focusing on different marketing strategies to get more people into the premium membership. So just a wealth of knowledge and nuggets here in today's interview. And I highly recommend everybody go to Mixergy.com, not only to access the free interviews that are available when you're listening to this, but also to see how Andrew uses the free content to then move people into becoming a paying member. So Andrew, I want to thank you very much for your time, and I want to come back to the final question for you, and that is, what advice would you have for other membership site owners or for people who are thinking about starting a membership?
I say two things. First, it's really easy to create good content that people will pay for. All I do is interviews. You can see that it's just me and video Skype recording and me using video Skype to record an interview and publish it on a WordPress site. Very easy. And the courses are just a go-to webinar subscription that I use to record them. And I don't even know everything about business. I, of course, don't pretend that I'm the guru of gurus. So I bring on other people and I ask them to teach what they're really good at. It's not that hard to create good quality content that you can put out there and charge for. And the second thing is, as I said in the beginning, don't be afraid to spy. Like, sign up for my newsletter just to see how I handle it, how I handle things. Click on the videos just to see how I show my interviews and to see what you can copy. Stu, I signed up for your email. I think one of the first things I did was sign up for your email subscription. And I remember seeing how you'd say, I've got this new plugin. It's available for members just this month. Next month it won't be available. Go and grab it. And I said, I'm going to try that. If it's working for Stu, let's see how it'll work for me. And sure enough, it worked on my side too, to say this is only free for right now. You've got to go and get it or else you're going to have to pay. So we learn from watching other people, and we learn from being a part of other people's communities. Thanks for letting me learn so much from you and for being so generous and letting me, frankly, copy a lot of your ideas too.
Well, I am grateful to you, Andrew. You're a great example of somebody who just puts into action what they are learning. And I love Mixergy.com. It's a great example of a wonderful membership site. Definitely encourage people to go visit it. It's Mixergy.com, and you'll be able to access great interviews. But also, as Andrew said, sign up and get on his email list to see how he uses his content to drive his paid membership. It's a great example of everything that we teach in real world fashion. So, Andrew, I want to thank you very much for your time and appreciate you joining us here today.
Thanks for having me on.
If you'd like to learn more from other membership site owners, then visit www.wishlistinsider.com. There you will be able to exchange ideas, gather feedback, and get membership site tips and tricks from people running membership sites in all kinds of niche markets around the world. No matter whether you're a newbie or a seasoned vet, you'll gain tremendous value from the membership site video tutorials, how-to articles, downloadable resources, and so much more. Wishlist Insider really has become the go-to place for membership site owners. Come and join us on the inside by visiting www.wishlistinsider.com.